and I think he's going to share with us a sort of similar trajectory of what's happening.
Okay, so first of all, I want to do a few thank yous. Thanks to Marge for putting us together, and already I've learned stuff that was worth the price of the trip in terms of finding out what's going on at Grady, and I look forward to David's talk. I want to acknowledge that there's a handful of people from county who are here who've, I think, taught me a lot and, you know, keep me honest throughout the way, and I expect to hear their comments and feedback today and beyond in terms of figuring out how to go along in this struggle for the long term. In terms of just, I wish I had done sort of the statistics of county, but I'll do just a few things before I get into the slides. So the county healthcare system, the Cook County healthcare system, there's seven entities that are part of it. So there's the John Stroger Hospital, which is about 450 specialty bed hospital that includes a specialty care center. There's Provident Hospital on the south side of Chicago that's at present about a 60-bed, kind of more of a community hospital. In the south suburbs, where a lot of poverty is moving to, there is Oak Forest Hospital. It used to be a long-term care facility. The long-term care facility piece of that was kind of devastated in 2007 and now has a small community-based hospital feel to it with about 60 beds. There's a network of ambulatory clinics, about 15 clinics in all. There's Core Center, which is an HIV specialty center. There's the Cook County Department of Public Health, which serves suburban Cook County. And finally, there's the CIRMAC Health Services, which provide jail services. And I think that some of the funding things would not look so different than the things that Daniel showed for Grady. So what I'm hoping to do with this talk is really is sort of an opportunity for me to think through what is the way to respond to what's going on. So to describe a little bit and then think about how to respond to our current environment with a relatively new board of directors and a new management team that they've brought on in terms of how do we make our case with them, finding the language that we hope that they can understand, and also try and galvanize the medical staff around this. So just a little bit of history. So in 2006, and, you know, this like totally echoes. I want to say a couple things off of Dr. Blumenthal's talk. So first of all, the last time I was on the ward service, I think we saw a young man who came from Grady with a dialysis catheter in place. Now I think I know why. You know, we've seen Alvarez and Marcel report, although they're not our main consultant. They made a round of consultation recommendations, not so different in terms of closing clinics. And there is one other thing that it'll probably come to me at some point. So 2006, there was a real severe budget shortfall where it was clear that the next year something was going to happen, and there was also a year of an election. And you've got to know a little bit about all this. So John Stroger was the sitting president for the Cook County Board. He was running for re-election. A week before the primary election, he had a stroke. And one of our doctors, an ER physician, but was quoted by, I believe this was the Tribune or the Sun-Times, but was quoted as a longtime Stroger family physician and said that after a stroke, you're sick for about a week, he should be back. Nobody saw him. His political career was over at that point. By July 19th, his son was named by the insiders of the Democratic Party to run for the county board president. He won the election, and 6 weeks later, he named that physician to be the chief of the Cook County Bureau of Health Services. And it just seems like a paradigm in terms of, so here the doctors protected the politicians, and similarly, the politicians protect an inner core of doctors and sort of this whole system of loyalties that exist, but that really isn't, you know, organized around what's most important, what would be the best choice under incredibly difficult circumstances. So the budget was cut with disruptions in care, and there was, again, an out of furor within the city that included both activists like us, but also included the business leaders of the city and sort of the larger health systems being very concerned that, you know, if county hospital system services failed, it would strain their hospital systems. And so a review committee was put together that, you know, had really lots of eminent people throughout the city, kept on being called as a blue ribbon committee. And by October 2007, they came out with a report. And the way that they described that there were five things that were at play: financial, that the hospital needed to be secured financially, that the mission was in danger, they were concerned about the morale and that lots of people were leaving, that there were important governance issues at play, and that the credibility of the entire system as being with its connection to county government was at play, so that nobody trusted anybody of saying anything good could possibly happen with this. And so then, because of that, they came out with recommendations that there be an independent board of trustees, and listed out a set of priorities. And one of the things that's just really important, and I think the folks who work at county will see this, that in many ways our current management team, as they've thought through a strategic plan, have gone well beyond these list of things in terms of, you know, trying to reform kind of healthcare in the city beyond what is really, I think, their mandate from at least this group. So going on in 2008, there was reform. At the county board meeting, I heard that, you know, it was a little bit after midnight. They kept turning the clock back on the very last day of when a budget had to be passed, February 29th, I think it was. It was a leap year. They had an extra day. And Stroger had 8 votes. He needed 9 to get the 9th vote. He gave in and said yes, he would support political independent governance with a 3-year term, Dr. Simon had to go, and in exchange that there would be a 1 cent sales tax that put Cook County at sort of the highest level of sales tax nationally, and, you know, became, from the instant it was passed, hugely unpopular and put the county government on the defensive. By 2009, so that year we got an independent board of directors, a mix of physicians, people from some of the major medical centers in the area, some business people, public health people, and one of the commissioners sits on our board. 2009, a new management team is hired, and we see an election coming round the bend. So part of what seems like is at play is that there's like these different kind of like, how do we cast this problem? And, you know, that people are sort of staking out these positions in terms of what is good. So for the health system board, I skipped to number 2. So first, you know, I think it's this daunting task of how do you figure out what are the right services when you know you don't have enough money, you know, that for every patient that's sitting in a waiting room, there's probably 2 or 3 at home that would like to be in that waiting room if they could be. And it is really an incredibly daunting task to try and figure that out. They've done it in a way where they've said they expect no more money, which is, like, I think for many of us, like a really problematic way in terms of, I think a lot of times when you say, you know, we can't have more, I think you're sort of maybe creating a situation that's ripe for failure. They've also brought this perspective of like the healthcare industry, that's sort of this whole new language for us and new practices, and I'll talk more about that. And then kind of also very key on their mind is how can they continue to exist? So they've got a 3-year term. They want to make some successes so that somebody will say, yes, we should have you as a permanent part of this. Todd Stroger is running for president, and it's really clear how can the healthcare system help perpetuate his political power. So any gaffe by our folks becomes, you know, fodder for his election. And I'm sure that there are several people who have announced against him. I'm sure we'll see more of this as the election season heats up to a February 3rd primary. The Tribune has this ongoing narrative that county's incredibly corrupt, and, you know, we're only good if we're far from them. They only think that anything that county could do, you know, that's not clearly like mega distances away could be tainted with corruption, and they have a lot of ink. Somebody told me, never argue with somebody who buys ink by the train load. And then silently, there's the private healthcare system, you know, where I think their concern is, how do we help their bottom line? In some, you know, for those few patients that we have that have good compensation, they love them, we think. You know, for the many patients who are uncompensated, they are worried to death about them. So an old cartoon of County, it seems relevant. I wanted to, this is a report from 2009 that looked at how the private sector in the Chicago area is doing in terms of their obligations for charity care. So it's not-for-profits, they have obligations by law to provide a certain percentage of their operating budget towards charity care and report it. And if anything, they're good at following their budgets and reporting things. And the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability showed that, so these I put Rush, Mercy, and U of C on the board because they have members who sit on our board of directors. And you can see that Rush is meeting 14% of its obligation, Mercy 62%, University of Chicago 17% of its obligations for charity care, you know, with millions of dollars at play. I put Mount Sinai on as like one of a community of community-based hospital on the southwest side, about a mile and a half away from us. There's a recent Wall Street Journal article about Mount Sinai that sort of posed them as the little engine that could, as like, you know, a community hospital in a poor community that was making a go of things. And you can see, in fact, they're more than meeting their charity care obligation. So the new leadership is starting to take place, and I sort of, as I've listened to them and trying to understand what's going on, I think that they're sort of bringing some of the, you know, the language and methods of the healthcare industry, you know, which totally makes sense. They're trained and steeped in that. So there's a lot of talk about staffing and efficiency, but often in this way of, you know, doing the same with less, as opposed to really posing as doing more with the same. And, you know, by thinking in terms of that we're going to see a flat budget for the foreseeable future, there's built-in contracts from the unions, you know, it means that in order to stay put, you have to have fewer people in the workplace. And so, you know, they're kind of posing this as that we can do the same with less. I think there's also a piece of this that it's really as a message to kind of the more civic community, the business community. It has the sound of, we are more efficient. If we can show the same numbers, but fewer people, fewer expenses, you know, we will have proven that we can be free of the county, that we are, you know, different than the county board. So some of the early things that the system board used this metric of full-time equivalents per adjusted bed day and said, you have too many employees. We had a very big Navigant performance improvement report. They reported that at the hospital I work at, Stroger Hospital, that their labor opportunities are 5.8% or $14 million that are there. One of the things that just, for me being an outpatient doctor, that, you know, I could sort of read it and understand it, and they said that their recommendation is that outpatient doctors should see an industry standard of 12 patients per half day, 9 half days a week. So on Friday, you know, I was working the room next door to one of those doctors that, you know, on a credentials report where, you know, where you ask, would you let this person see your family? There's yes and no. You know, anybody who knows this doctor wouldn't put yes, wouldn't put no. They would put absolutely. You know, one of the absolutely best doctors that you can imagine having in your institution. He came to work with me at clinic at 8:30, saw his 12 patients. By 3:30, he was done documenting. So, you know, the notion of being able to do this kind of panel of patients with any integrity and quality is just, like, beyond belief. Now, clearly, we could develop systems that were where we could work more efficiently, trim some of that time, do it better, but they're not there yet, by far. With billing and copay, we have a revenue consultant who wrote the copay policy. If you're in a meeting with them and you call it copays, they say, no, it's CareLink. You know, so everything's got a name that doesn't sound like what it really is. Their suggestion was that there should be a $10 copay, no denied care, but an enforcement of a collection standard. So sort of speaking out of both sides in terms of what a person of marginal means would hear. And then a $4 per 30-day prescription, and patients who couldn't do the upfront, they give them 14 days, one time, deal done. And what we've started to see is that the billing during the crisis was on for a while in terms of some of the direct-to-patient stuff. They were always billing the third-party payers. So they've done this whole limit of liability assessment. So people who, you know, we now think we have a better sense of who are truly poor and who have some modest income. The truly poor are not being billed, and we have a decent policy around that. But for that next strat of people, they are getting the bills turned back on, and we're seeing that billing is now part of the clinical discussion. And people I could bring, and they would break your hearts in terms of their life circumstances around health, are now making decisions to not get health care in certain ways at the public hospital. And then I'm going to do a couple things on quality. Am I like way over time? Am I good? 5 minutes? Whew, okay, there's too much to say here. So as a medical staff person, quality is really important to us. It really should be what drives the medical staff. And I think that one of the things that's just important to us is that, there's this incredible tension on the slide that I showed you before in terms of the staffing and efficiency, billing and co-pays and quality could all sort of like pull in different directions and actually destroy the fabric as opposed to, mend the fabric that we need. I'm gonna do a couple of things in terms of just like looking at things, like we started to look at core measures a little bit more and thinking about it from the eyes of our new board of directors. So for CHF measures, these are how we stack up. And I put a couple things on here. So, when it comes to doing meds, we do fine. When it comes to smoking cessation, which is actually like a horrible measure, it's clinically meaningless. I know a lot about that one. We do a little less well. We, like many other hospitals, are doing this administrative fix of just writing something on a piece of paper that every patient gets without having any integrity in terms of any kind of counseling that's going. So it's really proving that you can do an administrative fix to a problem as opposed to really doing clinical interventions. And we also know from a recent publication in JAMA that there's kind of very, very small predictors of these process measures on outcomes. I've looked a little bit in terms of what's on hospitalcompare.gov for satisfaction. And the first time I wanted to sort of look at, well, how are other public hospitals doing? Doesn't that seem like the relevant comparison? So I picked, three and then the little hospital that could from Chicago, Mount Sinai. Actually our satisfaction looks pretty decent compared to some of the other hospitals, and with Grady and County and sort of this difficult situation, there's a natural comparison. Parkland, that has certainly a lot of stability and a very strong and well-respected CEO, does a little bit better and points to a future where maybe we could do better. We certainly are doing quite a bit better in terms of satisfaction than our community hospital that's nearby. Well, what our board sees is what their hospitals are doing, and you can see that at Rush, UIC, Mercy, and U of C, that actually their satisfaction in general looks quite a bit better. And it really sort of like brought home for me the question of, so what's the difference? And is there something that's inherently different? So is the experience of being poor and getting a satisfaction different than the experience of being middle class or above and getting a satisfaction survey? Are there sampling biases at play? What's the impact of waiting in the emergency room for 24 hours for a bed? That's kind of like not on the horizon of us being able to change because of the pressures on the public hospital. What's the issue in terms of the scope of need that when your housing's marginal, your food is marginal, how satisfied can you be with your medical care? Not to say that we couldn't do better, but I feel like it's questions that we don't know the answers to. And of course, I think there's issues just of social class that are at play, within this kind of national data set. One of the things that we picked up, so that when you look at the hospitalcare.gov, they report three different DRGs of CHF. I spend time with CHF because it's like the best data set that exists in terms of the Medicare.gov piece of things. And what it looks like at Stroger Hospitals is that our acuity of CHF patients is much, much less. Is that true? So is it the fact that we don't have a big Medicare population, we're not connected to nursing homes, and so that we may in fact have less sick patients, But I think it's also, remember, we have a short stay unit, so our least sick CHF patients go to a short stay unit. They don't come up as an admission. And in fact, we probably have abysmal coding, and that's really what's at play. So how are we going to get better if we don't have coding that's at work? In our mortality, we're at the national averages. The other hospitals look a little bit better. But this is data that's adjusted for acuity. So the slide I showed you before that shows that our acuity may be off base in terms of how well it's being reported, we can't really compare. We perhaps, if that coding is bad, it's influencing how this acuity data is looking to the public and to our board. I think it's also, remember, in the background, that what is the effect of poverty? There's a really wonderful study a couple years ago on literacy in the Medicare population showing that people with inadequate literacy with heart disease have an adjusted ratio of mortality of 1.52. So clearly we think we have more poorly literate seniors than the private sector does, and that cannot be adjusted for. So there's a way in which we're sort of like pushing a stone up a mountain that I think our board does not understand. Okay, let me move on. I think I made those points. That's okay. Okay, so coming to 2009, a draft strategic plan was announced, and then with a series of town hall meetings, both with employees and communities. And the components I just kind of wanted to go over. So there's a bunch of things that are systems improvements, things that I think we would all endorse and think are overall really, really good in terms of trying to increase patient satisfaction, increase employee morale, kind of really bread and butter things that, just to make the hospital and the health system work better. There's a section on realignment of services that's very, very vague, but that they may close Provident Hospital, Oak Forest Hospital, may consolidate PEDS and OB services, much of which are, paid for, on the medical center campus and work with Rush and UIC. And some idea in terms of launching this new idea in terms of developing some multi-specialty hubs. And then there's a section in terms of partnerships between us and federally qualified health centers and other regional health providers around the provision of care. Access is mentioned as a component of this, but there's no explicit access goals. How many patients, how many delays, trying to pull people into care. There's no specific goals that are part of it. And within some of our meetings with leadership, there's language of, will this be provision of care as opposed to assurance of care through these partnerships? And a financial plan was not included that made it like really, really hard to read and understand what we were talking about in terms of delivering. At the same time, layoffs were announced. And very quickly, the two got merged into one, and for I think many people we felt that the layoffs were the strategic plan and the beginning of things that we would see in the future. And so really kind of blew the discussion apart, and actually much of the strategic plan has now been put on a back burner. In part also, the strategic plan and the layoffs became fodder for this election that's coming, so that Todd Stroger is riding up to the hospital on his horse, trying to save us as a way of saving his campaign. Okay, so what's next? We have all these kind of milestones that are in front of us. So we've got this primary coming up. We've this 1% sales tax that's been it's been unpopular, maybe rolled back partway. The budget has to be passed by the county board at the end of February, and we think that it will have more cuts in it as sort of an approach going forward. There's the strategic planning process, and then for us always there's kind of, we're at the point for Stroger Hospital where Joint Commission is probably in the wings waiting, to come and visit us and could make our lives considerably more difficult if we're not ready. Okay, so I just, one of the things that's been important to me is their way to talk about this with both our administration and our board that's, you know, and even to sort of make sense of all of this. I think that as like a medical CF person, when we brought in this board, what we hoped is that we would see our clinical services that are acknowledged to be, that we have a very, very good, strong cadre of doctors, and that that's really been the strength of the institution over the years, would be now joined by some administrative strength and some financial administration with support that would put the house in a little bit more order. And, you know, we were really hoping that these three elements could work together effectively and have lots of worries in this early period that, in fact, they're not. I think that we need a vision that's bigger than this, you know, and so we got to really put, you know, we got to make it patient-centered. So in all these discussions, patients are not part of it at all, and there's not a sense that we're really kind of, you know, there's kind of some sense that maybe we may just be kind of a Costco of, you know, the unwanted health services by the rest of the health system, so that we'll do all the high ticket items that other people don't want to do, but not really be a system of health care for people who are poorer. And, you know, as a, I think that the medical staff desperately wants this to be a system of health care, and one that responds to people throughout their life cycle and not just, you know, 40 to 65 years old, pre-Medicare, you know, hard luck, chronic disease population. I think we want it to be bigger. I want it to be bigger than that, so I think it's really important to understand the families and communities that we serve. I think that, you know, one of our colleagues quotes that in the city of Chicago, every day there are 10 African Americans who die as a result of health disparities, and that has to be part of our mission in terms of trying to bring that number down. You know, there are certainly huge social epidemics that are at play. I think, you know, we have to have our eyes wide open in terms of, you know, health industry, both some of, you know, I went to Don Berwick's talk this morning, so it's both some of the wonderful opportunities that could be part of the health system, some of the more nefarious ones that, you know, cherry pick and push people our way. So with that, I'll just end that in 2007, we did a big public campaign to try and support the independence governance, and I'll leave you with these images from our wonderful patients. Lots of people in this room helped. Oh, I just want to make one additional plug. So tomorrow, Simon Piller, who's also a county physician, will be presenting at one of the public hospital sessions. And so if people are interested in this, I think Simon will bring other perspectives that I think will be really wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, David. So our third presentation comes from where I live now, Boston. So Dr. David Gore is the chair of the Department of Medicine.